Hi, I'm Damian McGee, host of the VA Palo Alto podcast, and this is episode 11. In this episode, we do something a little bit different than what we've been doing. Every June is PTSD Awareness Month, and this June, we hosted a Facebook Live conversation with the acting director of the National Center for PTSD, Dr. Craig Rosen. Dr. Rosen, who's also an associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences with Stanford University, came by to speak to us about all the different technology and emerging research taking place with the National Center for PTSD. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a five-star review, and tell a friend about the show. So now, what you will hear is the audio from that Facebook Live session. We hope you enjoy. Dr. Rosen, I guess we'll go ahead and get started, and we'll go from there.
Great.
All right. So, again, thank you for being here. And you are with the National Center for PTSD, the local division, which, and remind me what
it's
the name
the
of the
Dissemination and Training Division.
Dissemination and Training Division. So why don't we, for those who don't know, just go ahead and start with kind of what does the National Center for PTSD do? Who's your audience? What are you guys there for?
So the National Center for PTSD was set up in 1989 when people were still sort of figuring out what this PTSD thing was.
Right, right.
And our mission at that point was to really advance a knowledge and improve care for post-traumatic stress.
Okay.
So our original, so although we're part of the VA system and funded by VA, our mandate is actually broader than that.
Okay.
Our mandate is really, well, how do we help understand post-traumatic stress disorder and help with that?
So and that's for anyone in the country.
That's for anyone in the country.
Gotcha.
I think when we first got started, it was actually sort of a broader mandate. I think now that we've had wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, a lot of people are turning home who need help for that.
Right.
There's been a lot more focus on kind of how we're helping that population, but the purpose of the center actually is broader than that.
Okay.
So there's we have a headquarters division in White River Junction, Vermont. We have a clinical neurosciences division that's really looking at sort of the biology of PTSD in West Haven, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an evaluation division in West Haven, Connecticut that also evaluates VA programs, how they're doing. We've got a behavioral sciences division in Boston. We added a women's health sciences division in Boston. And we have a division in the Pacific Islands that focuses on diversity issues in PTSD.
Okay.
Our mandate here is really, we have sort of two core areas of expertise. One is really the issue of sort of dissemination implementation. How do you get things from the science pipeline to actual care?
Okay.
How do you actually get, it's nice that you develop the treatment. How do you actually get it used?
Right.
And then the other place that our area of expertise we've been building is a lot of the mobile health and mobile app kind of stuff. So okay. Those are two sort of areas of strength out of our division here.
So I want to touch on the apps in a second, but for the dissemination part, when you say getting it from kind of like from research to implementation, what does that look like? I mean, do you all go to community doctors? Is it just implementing through VA systems? What does that look like for you all?
Yeah, so I think to kind of put into the larger picture, I'd say probably most people, our best treatments for PTSD are actually originally developed for rape survivors.
Okay.
So one of them is prolonged exposure, another is cognitive processing therapy. There's some other treatments like EMDR. But originally, a lot of people weren't necessarily trained in these.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, so I think one of the things that VA has really been a leader in over the past decade, really, mm-hmm. Now 12 years, has been standing up large-scale programs to get a lot of clinicians trained in these treatments.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So okay. I would say since 2006, I think we've trained 6,000-7,000 VA clinicians,
wow.
Probably maybe more than that, in these two treatments. It's actually hard to find enough clinicians in the community who know these treatments. So,
right.
So the VA is kind of ahead of the game in terms of having a trained workforce to do that.
Okay.
Now there's sort of more of a shift in terms of what can we do to actually help community providers and other folks,
mm-hmm.
Who may be seeing veterans but also maybe seeing other folks.
Mm-hmm.
So now that there's a VA set up a community provider toolkit, which has a lot of information for community providers who are seeing veterans in terms of resources they can use, when would they want to refer somebody to the VA, what kind of background and resources they can use.
Right.
So there's been more of a push to help with some of those pieces. There have been some states like Texas that have gone and trained a whole lot of community providers who see veterans in cognitive processing therapy.
Right. But it sounds like kind of one of the more important things to know is that not only is what you all, the work you all are doing is not only for veterans, but kind of getting this information out and helping people is not only for those who care specifically for veterans. I mean,
yes.
you're This is across all communities across the country. We're trying to help everyone, type of thing.
Right.
Okay.
I think our sort of core mandate is veterans, and then we have a broader mandate. And so I think a lot of the things that we develop are sort of double duty.
Absolutely.
So for example, I think a lot of our training materials, which we're sort of saying we can use for VA clinicians, can be used for other folks as well. A lot of our information fact sheets that we, so I think a lot of our sharing information, right, that's sort of for everybody. So, okay, we have fact sheets on responses after disasters, after the Sonoma wildfires, mm-hmm, what are things families should know? Mm-hmm. That stuff's for
that
everybody.
Applies to everyone.
The
right.
Things that involve a whole lot of heavy lifting and really partnering with people to kind of get people trained up and supervise them and manage that stuff, we're doing that in VA. I've got a grant now doing some of that in the Department of Defense.
Okay.
It's harder to say, hi, I'm running a rape counseling center. How can I get my people trained up?
Right.
I wish we could be in a position to do that.
No, that makes sense. Now, one of the things that I know as far as, like you said, creating things that are for the community are your apps. Mm-hmm. Although they are created and you could argue designed for the veteran community, I know that they can be used by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the apps you guys have developed, where they are, how people find them, those types of things?
Sure. So you can find these things. These can be both found on Google Play and on the App Store. Mm-hmm. And if you type in PTSD, these are probably the things that will come up first.
Okay.
One of the earliest things we developed, which is probably the most widely used with hundreds of thousands of downloads, is PTSD Coach.
Okay.
That's designed not so much, that's really designed for the problem of, what do I do? How do I get through the day? So for example, a lot of the symptoms of PTSD are things like trouble sleeping, nightmares. Mm-hmm. So like, what do I do when it's 2 a.m,
mm-hmm,
I can't call my doctor,
mm-hmm,
and I'm pacing, and how do I have help in the moment with those kinds of things?
Right.
So PTSD Coach is designed to provide some education about PTSD, help people kind of self-assess how they're doing. But the one of the most important pieces of it is sort of there are a list of common problems, and then here's a series of things you can do about them. So
cool.
I'm keyed up and can't go back to sleep. What are things I can do to manage?
In the moment.
In the moment.
Okay.
And then it gives you some different coping skills that you can be using.
Right.
Some of the other most used apps, there's a mindfulness coach, which teaches people sort of mindfulness skills, mindfulness meditation kind,
mm-hmm,
of skills.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's useful for PTSD, but it's useful for a whole range of problems. We have a PTSD family coach that's really sort of education for family members.
Okay.
And also some things for managing their own stress. But there's actually a pretty broad range of tools we're working on. We have several apps which are designed for people who are in treatment. It's almost like a workbook.
Okay.
But
I know one of the kind of important things, and I just kind of learned this when doing some background on the work you guys do, is there are certain apps that allow for the communication that people put into them or the information that people put into those apps to then be transferred somewhere else so people can track that data. But your apps don't do that.
They do not.
Okay. Explain that to everyone, what that means.
That's a great point. So I think it's interesting to be sitting in Silicon Valley and near Facebook, where information is kind of widely shared, and
right,
in the VA world, that ain't so.
Right.
The VA world, your information stays here, it doesn't go anywhere, it's well protected. So we kind of operate under different privacy rules, I think, than much of the commercial
the regular
industry.
Regular world. Right.
So one of the decisions in building all of these apps is, there's no data that all data sits on your phone.
Okay.
So for example, if you're filling out a PTSD symptom measure of how am I feeling today on this PTSD checklist, and you're tracking your progress, that sits on your phone. If you're in treatment, you want to show it to your doctor, you got to bring your phone with you and say, hey doc, right, here's how I've been doing.
Right.
I think we have we're experimenting with some research versions that share data, but for those are really only for research projects, and people are told, like, you can sign up for this research project, yes or no.
Right.
Otherwise, all the information sits on your phone. And that's, so I think it's a strength in terms of privacy.
Absolutely.
It limits, but I think it's also important for people to realize, like, if I'm really distressed and I said on my phone, marked I'm really distressed, nobody else knows. I got to tell somebody.
Right.
It's not automatically going to somebody who can get me help.
And I think that's, we've got some questions coming in. So real quick, to all of you who are joining us, I want to say thank you. I promise I've got my phone in my hand, so I'm going to get down to some questions here in a second. We've got Fred, Michael, Amanda. Thank you all for being here. Joe, I promise I see you. Give me a couple minutes and we'll get to your questions. There was one thing you said about, people getting involved. I know that there's, and it's a little bit off the
off the subject, but I know that there's a way that if veterans want to actually help you all as you are testing newer apps or updates to apps, they can come in or contact you or something to that approach and be a part of that as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, they certainly can. Okay. I think we're in the process of building new versions of apps, it's really helpful to have people who want to be user testers and help us figure out what pieces are working and what pieces we should be doing different. Or sometimes we're going to be playing an upgrade and be nice to know what other features people could use.
Got it. But there's a way for veterans, if you're interested in kind of helping as they're developing the apps, mm-hmm. you can come in, test the app on your phone, see what you like, see what you don't like, offer recommendations and those types of things, correct?
That'd be great.
Okay. So let's take a couple minutes for questions from the viewers before we get back to ours. So this question, let me scroll back up, sorry. Okay, here we go. We got a question from Catherine Young, and the question is PTSD always immediate or can it be delayed?
PTSD can definitely be delayed. People can have different trajectories. So there's some people who go through something pretty horrific, you think it would really impact them, and they actually come out fine, and they're mm-hmm. They're not faking it, they just really are okay.
Right.
They're rolling with it.
Right.
But it's very common for people to have an immediate reaction that gets better. So for example, if you think of all the people who fled from the Sonoma wildfires, everybody was probably, on edge, not sleeping.
Absolutely.
You're stressed out right afterwards. Most of those folks are getting better with time, some folks are not. But there's also a delayed onset. And I think one of the things that can happen, when people retire, when they get older, sometimes mm-hmm. there's PTSD kicking in. So one thing that may happen is for a lot of people that, part of PTSD is that you've got thoughts and memories of things you've been through that you're trying to push out of your head and having trouble doing that.
Right.
If you're really busy with work or other things, your mind may be occupied.
But as life slows down.
As life slows down, you got more time for those things to kick in.
Right.
And also maybe if you hit points in your life where you feel more vulnerable and less powerful, let's say, I'm not doing the job which gave me a lot of sort of your purpose. I've got some medical issues I'm dealing with.
My kids are grown and out of the house. Does all that kind of stuff.
Right. My kids are grown out of the house. If I'm in a position where I'm feeling kind of vulnerable, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that may also bring back these memories. The last time I felt really, really vulnerable.
Right, right. Now she had a follow on that said, how do you tell the difference between PTSD and then severe anxiety?
That's a great question. So I think it's really kind of what it's about.
Okay.
And of course there are people who can have PTSD and have other anxiety problems too. So really the defining piece about PTSD is that it's tied, is that you've been through some kind of life-threatening event.
Okay.
And then since then there's a real change in how you're doing. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of people who are anxious about all sorts of things. I'm anxious about what people are gonna think of me. I'm anxious about talking in front of people on Facebook Live. I'm anxious about, am I being a good enough parent? All sorts of other things. But I think, the thing about PTSD is that something has changed since that event. So you've got thoughts and memories of that event are coming back to you. You're really kind of keyed up and on edge. People with PTSD often have a lot of anger and irritability, which mm-hmm. other anxieties may or may not have.
Right.
And there's also sort of a change in just kind of how you feel about yourself and the world.
Right. And anxiety, and this is, I'm not a clinical person, so make sure I let everyone know that. But I mean, kind of in a very layman's term, anxiety can simply exist just because, whereas at least in the simplest form, PTSD usually has something that triggered it. There's something that started that for each person, right?
Right.
Okay.
And I guess the other thing is they used to think of PTSD as a variety of anxiety disorder, and mm-hmm. Lay people may not care. The psychiatry manual really sort of moved it out into its own category.
Right.
But I think that there is overlap with if I'm feeling incredibly anxious because when I'm in a crowded shopping mall and I can't see everybody around me and I feel like I'm in danger, like when I was in a war zone and needed to be able to see everybody, down the streets in Fallujah, that may not be. Some of that may overlap with I'm in a crowded place and I get really socially anxious and worried about what people think of me. And some of those things may feel the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think you touched on something before we get to a couple more questions. We were talking before we came on live, and it's interesting because kind of PTSD research kind of started for rape or sexual assault.
For rape and sexual assault and for Vietnam veterans who are coming back.
Oh, okay.
And so there's two different groups of people
right.
with really different experiences, and they said, hey, how come they got some of the same things going on when they're really so when it's so
and
different.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you is kind of can you just kind of explain to those watching about the fact that PTSD is not just a veteran only thing. I mean, it's a human thing. It's not a veteran thing.
So I think, you know, if you do surveys of the US population, probably 70% of the men, 60% of the women have at some time in their life been through some kind of life-threatening experience, right?
Okay.
They've been in a car accident, they've been, through domestic violence, they've been through an assault, they've lived in a high-crime area, they've suddenly lost a loved one. So any of those things are events which could give rise to PTSD.
Okay.
And probably about 1 in 10 women and about, and 1 in 20, 25 men, about 4% of the men, about 10% of the women, have at some time in their life had symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
So most people who've been through something awful come through okay.
Okay.
But a significant portion of people really have this stay with them. And it doesn't, and it's more than they're just shook up for a while, but they continue having nightmares or thoughts coming back to them. They feel kind of worthless, or they feel like, what's the point of anything? They avoid situations that they used to enjoy because it just kind of feels uncomfortable.
Right, right.
That's really getting in the way of their life.
Right.
So that can happen across the board. I think we've given a lot, because of where some of our funding and attention is, we've been doing a lot of things of what can we do for help people who are warriors.
Right, right.
But you also have civilians, you also have people, in war, you also have people living in high crime neighborhoods. You have...
Absolutely.
People evacuated with floods and other things.
Absolutely. Okay, great. Catherine, I know you have other questions. I will try to come back to some of those. I want to get to some other people. Fred, you have a question that has to do with, the question is, can we now go to any doctor we want? I think your question has to do with choice and the Mission Act. That is not Dr. Rosen's lane, so we're going to save that question. We will put a link or a response to you with kind of a FAQ sheet about the choice and the Mission Act. And then we will also be planning to bring someone on to talk about that in the next couple months. So please come back and we'll kind of break that down for you. I just wanted you to know we're not avoiding the question, just not the right subject matter expert mm-hmm. for that question. So Amanda has a question, and I know some of this answer if you don't, but we'll go with what you have. Amanda had a question. Are they going to train police officers to be aware of PTSD?
So there's been... I haven't been as up on this as I have in the last couple of years. We've done some work in terms of training VA police, and I know we've done some things locally with San Jose police in terms of training them, in
Correct.
Terms of interacting with folks with PTSD. Because one of the key pieces is, how do I take this person who's kind of on edge and, sort of train for combat and really try to respect that try to be more transparent with them of like, here's what's going on, here's what's going down,
right.
I'm not pulling some surprise on you
right.
when you're primed for
right.
danger.
One of the things, Amanda, just to, this is locally. I don't know where you're located, but I know here in Palo Alto, and I know this has happened in other VAs around the country. A lot of times, either the social workers or even the VA police have engaged with the community and local police forces to train them. I know that we've been on this thing where we're giving out the Veterans Crisis Line cards mm-hmm. to try and get every police officer to have one in their pocket. But we try to work with the community and help local police officers be prepared to engage a veteran if there is a potential for them having PTSD. So mm-hmm. I know it's happening. I can't speak for every VA across the country, but I do know it's happening around the country. Let me pop back to Catherine's question, and then we'll go back to some of our questions. And you kind of touched on this, but and we were talking about this earlier. She asked if PTSD is ever dangerous. Let me rephrase the question just to cover what we wanted to cover too. Can we talk about really the fact that PTSD is not synonymous with violent?
Yes.
How about, let's take it from that approach.
Right. So I think the pieces that get headlines, or when somebody does something to get on the news, it's because there's something violent or dramatic, and that's what gets on the headlines. So one of the symptoms of PTSD is problems with anger. That's a common thing, and if you think of you're kind of in fight or flight mode, right? Mm-hmm. I'm either gonna run away from stuff or engage.
Right.
Lots of folks with PTSD have problems with anger. That doesn't necessarily translate into being into being violent.
Right.
So I think that often that there are things in terms of being irritable, yelling at people, if there are people who've lost jobs over how they handle things at work. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily translate into being, into being a shooter. So for example, we've had series of school shooting sorts of things. I don't think any of those have been related to PTSD. They've been related to other things.
Right.
So yes, I think that there are people in some cases that there have been things where people actually been perpetrated violence, and if they're veterans and they're trained, they're good at it.
That's more
lethal. But there's a lot of people who struggle with anger problems, don't like having the anger problems, but there may be more things like learning to handle road rage. Often one of the two common complaints people say I want help with mm-hmm. are I want trouble, help with sleep and nightmares, and I want help managing anger.
Sure. So we talked about, you were just kind of touching on this with the violence and people who may have lost their job for the way they reacted in an anger type of situation. But with that said, let's say I'm an employer and let's say I've mm-hmm. got a couple veterans applying for jobs, which I know a lot of people want to mm-hmm. hire veterans. But I think it's fair for them to if they don't know, to be worried about, well, what if this veteran has PTSD and what does that mean for the mm-hmm. safety of my staff? What would you tell those people about kind of that whole stigma and what mm-hmm. they should know?
Right. So I think one piece is to not assume that people have got PTSD because they're a veteran. Some
Absolutely.
May and some won't. Right. I think there's estimates of maybe 15% or something like that have had PTSD.
Okay.
And obviously there's a whole bunch of other assets you're getting when you're hiring a veteran. Right. There's the ability to follow through and the can-do attitude and the sense of mission and all those other strengths that you're getting as part of this as part of this package.
Right.
I'd say that so since you're hiring somebody and you don't know what baggage they're carrying, mm-hmm. right? You don't know this about anybody. You don't know anybody kind of what they're carrying with them, what's going on in their life. I would say that if you have folks who where there are issues coming up, I think some of the things that are going to matter for people. Is I think this is where having good EAP programs and things like that can be helpful.
Employee assistance programs
right. are ways of helping people if they're having issues with communications or conflict problems. Also because one of the transitions which doesn't even have to do with PTSD is just in a lot of civilian places you can't just order somebody and it happens.
Right.
I've got a debate and dialogue thing that I have to handle disagreements in a different way.
Right.
But that can be harder if I've got troubles with anger, or if I feel like if I'm not totally controlling something, it's going to totally mess up. And I'm approaching this like it's a life or death thing when it's not.
Absolutely.
So I think that there's EAP programs, communication skills, things that can help. I think some people end up getting overstimulated, like there's kind of that there's too many things going on at once. Figuring out a way that they can sort of structure their job and their role so mm-hmm. that there's only... there's not a whole more things coming at them at a time that they
right.
can do.
Right.
But there's probably a lot of things they can do in terms of helping people if they need some structure and other things if they're having trouble with concentration or irritability stuff. But I don't think that they shouldn't go around assuming though that means everybody's violent.
Well, and I think there's a couple things you said that I personally, being a veteran myself, would love for people to hear. One of them is that when you hire someone, you don't know their baggage, regardless of them being a veteran or not. So we're not in some different class when it comes to mm-hmm. that. And two, like you said, the number for veterans who have maybe diagnosable PTSD is, or at least who have been diagnosed with mm-hmm. it, is fairly low, considering the amount of veterans there are in this country. And
right.
so just people, even if they approach it from that perspective, is I don't know this person any more than I know that person. And it's 15% of that population. I think I'm okay.
Right. Well, if you figure that 7% of the population, general U.S. population,
right.
probably has had PTSD at some point in their lifetime.
And that's more than veterans. So.
Well, it's not more than they're veterans. The rates with veterans is higher because they've been through more.
That 7% includes way more than just veterans.
Yes, that 7% is everybody.
Yeah. yeah.
You don't know what somebody's carrying.
Absolutely. No, it's a very good point.
And I think the other piece also is the fact that you've got some mental health problem doesn't mean you can't be a good employee. And the fact that you're depressed or anxious or whatever else, Doesn't mean you can't be a good.
Can still
you
know, be managed.
Yeah, can still, you know, the same way that you got people who got diabetes and you manage that at the workplace too.
Absolutely. No, that's a good point. Okay, so let's switch over to maybe more of the personal side of it. So let's say that I'm a family member, or we have a family member who's watching, and they have a loved one who, let's say, veteran or non-veteran, may be suffering from PTSD, and there may be some concern. Where could they start? Maybe I know there's a PTSD mm-hmm. family. I think you mentioned app, but what should they do? How should they approach the situation? What can you offer them?
So a few different things. So one is a way for them to just get educated, to get an idea of what is this that I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. Is to use the National Center for PTSD website, PTSD.va.gov.
Okay.
Has resources for members of the public, whether they're veterans or family members or other folks. So if you're trying to get some idea of what is this that I'm looking at, is this thing PTSD or mm-hmm. is this part of just, you know, regular readjustment from somebody coming back from a redeployment?
And right.
Have, you know, that can help people kind of understand some of what they're looking at and what they're dealing with.
Okay.
I think for veterans, there is a... there is a Coaching Into Care phone line, which unfortunately I don't have with me, but I guess we can post that.
Yep.
Which is specifically for, I think my loved one veteran's got a problem. I don't know how to help them engage with this stuff. How can you help coach me how to help them?
Okay.
And how to approach them.
So and that's called Coaching Into Care?
Coaching Into Care.
Okay.
And so there's, you know, so we have a crisis line that people can call if they're feeling distressed. There's also a care of thing of saying, it's not an emergency. It's not like, you know, 911 thing. But
right.
How do I help, you know, my loved one recognize that they've got a drinking problem or PTSD or something else? And how do I help them get some help at the VA? I think there's also sort of a general stance of how do you approach somebody with a sense of putting the problem on the table, but with some compassion. Not what the hell's the matter with you.
Right.
But, you know, I'm seeing this, I'm worried about it. Yeah, you say it's not a thing, but it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
How can we sort of join together to address this problem? You know, and I think that in some couples, you know, I think with any kind of problem, if it's something that they sort of jointly deal with, face together, it can make them much more powerful.
Absolutely.
I used to do a education group with couples where the veteran with PTSD and their spouse or partner and trying to sort of figure out how to deal with it. And one of the things I would say to the couple is, particularly if they're, especially the language of Vietnam vets we get, say, you know, when you are having PTSD, when you're in the bunker, mm-hmm. is your wife in the bunker with you or is she outside? Have you given her permission, permission to be on your
team?
And you're able to join it together?
Right.
Or are they trying to reach out to you, but you're not letting them in?
Right. That makes sense. That's very good. Okay, so we've got, let me make sure we don't have any questions. I know we're down to our last few minutes. How many do we have, guys? We're at the time. Okay, so let me check real quick. And
I want to have one shout out.
Yeah, no, you're definitely going to get the last word. Well, kind of the last word. But let me see. So we went through some of the gender stuff that Catherine had asked about. Are there more? This one's actually a good question, and then we'll wrap up. She asks, are there more likely times for someone to experience symptoms? So nighttime, daytime, traffic. I mean, are there any times where it's a higher chance?
I think triggers are kind of very personal.
Okay.
So I think that people are often getting nightmares. I think for people who've been through deployments where, you know, either IEDs, driving maybe particularly hard, but I think it's kind of what pushes their personal buttons.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, before I close, sir, the floor is yours. A couple minutes. Anything you want to say? Anything we forgot? Anyone you want to speak to?
I think one thing we wanted to put out there is we didn't really get to talk very much about, you know, treatment and options for that.
Yes.
And I think especially for people who, either if they're getting care in the VA, but also if they're looking for care in the community, kind of want to know what kind of care that is out there and what they should get. So I wanted to give a shout out at the PTSD.va.gov. There's a treatment decision aid tool that basically educates people about the treatments that we've done the most research on and we're the most sure that they work.
Nice.
And kind of explains to them what they're like, what the features are, so they can kind of make some decisions about that.
Okay, and I think we put that up on the screen. If not, we will. It's PTSD.va.gov, correct?
Yeah, and then within there, there's a treatment decision aid that will kind of tell people about kind of the four treatments that we know the most about.
Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you. Dr. Rosen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here. For all of you who joined, we really appreciate you for joining us. And again, I cannot ask you enough, please write down the Veterans Crisis Line number, put it in your phone, stick it on your refrigerator, whatever you need to do. If there's someone you know who needs that assistance or needs that phone number, we ask that you pass it off to them. So, Dr. Rosen?
And civilians can use that phone number as well.
Oh, there you go. And civilians, you can use the phone number as well. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So I guess that's it for us. Thank you again for being here. I really appreciate it. All right. You guys have a good day.